Hi, and welcome to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network on the internet. We are broadcasting from two shipping containers at Roberta's Pizza at 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm Carmen DeVito.
And I'm Alice Marcus Krieg.
And we are the ladies of Groundworks, Inc. We design, build, and maintain gardens all around New York. And this show aims to bring culture to horticulture. So today we have a very old friend of ours, Scott Appel, as our special guest, calling in from Vieques, Puerto Rico.
And there's no snow there.
Right, Scott?
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we hear you.
Oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm talking to you, gal pal. It's been so long.
We're excited to have you as our guest.
I am delighted to be of help and to be there with you out of a shipping container. How cool.
Yeah. I wish you could see us now. Well, Scott today is going to share his knowledge of growing some uncommon fruits and spices indoors. And I'd like to begin, Scott, by reading your bio.
Well, all right.
I will read your bio, if you don't mind.
No, please.
Scott's bio starts with the Green Man, registered trademark. And then it says, Video et Nutrio Totum Plantarum. Will you translate that Latin for me, Scott?
Well, it means I see and I grow all plants. And that really is the motto of my company, the Green Man. And, of course, I'm a one-person company, as the both of you know.
Yes, yes. So Scott describes himself as a garden writer, horticultural taxonomist, educator, and lecturer. Scott D'Appel, the Green Man, is a self-professed culinary horticulturist. Although he is a professional horticultural taxonomist, he is also a trained baker, chef, and culinary historian. Combining all of these disciplines into one, he explains to his cooking and gardening students the history of the diverse herbs, fruits, and vegetables used in the kitchen or cultivated in both temperate and tropical gardens. He is the author of several books and innumerable articles. He lives, teaches, writes, cooks, and gardens in Vieques, Puerto Rico. Stop. Now, wait a minute. This is Scott.
Well, thank you very much. It sounds like a really great eulogy and not an introduction.
But wait, I'm not done. This is Scott's very edited bio. He left out many other things, one of which is horticultural mentor. Now, Scott, from my perspective, lived and breathed horticulture. In his Soho loft, he had a veritable menagerie of small animals as well as a jungle of plants under glass and in every window. Now, I remember, Scott, when I first visited your home, I felt like I was transported to the Victorian age. As a writer and as an educator, you inspired me, and you inspired, it's true, and you informed so many people on your lectures and your tours, and you especially inspired me to learn, to continue to grow professionally, and unbeknownst to you, your horticultural life inspired mine, and I wanted to say that publicly.
Oh, bless your heart. So at least I did a good thing for you.
Yes, you did. Now that you've relocated to the tropics in earnest and not just pretend, and you traded the urban jungle for a real one, you continue to teach, of course, and share your knowledge, and that's what you're going to do with us today. So I'd like to begin, Scott, by asking you to talk to us a little bit about the gardens and orchards that you've made in Vieques. Tell us what they're like and what you're growing there.
Well, we have about 4 acres here. Vieques is a little island municipality off of Puerto Rico. It's considered Puerto Rican, but we are an island unto ourselves. Mm-hmm. We're about 22 miles long, about 7 miles wide. We have 4 acres here, and when my partner Bill and I moved here, I went mad with buying plants. Mad. I spent a fortune. Everything I ever wanted or read about in my entire life, I bought. And, of course, I am up to my nose and beyond my eyeballs with gardening work.
You don't have a gardener to assist you? No intern?
No, in fact not. And you're welcome to come down.
Wait, should we announce that your interns are welcome?
Yes, but they have to work for room and board.
Yeah. Or they have to camp.
But what everybody thinks is, they think that Vieques is really tropical, like we live on Maui or Bali. And in fact, I call it warm temperate. In wintertime, we easily get 6 months with not a lick of rain, and things dry up. It can be extremely dry here, and watering is an issue. This has been a very wet season, and I'm sure up in the north, you know how bad or different your weather patterns have been.
Yes.
It's been like that for us. No snow, of course, but unusually timed rains for the middle of winter. And, of course, winter's tourist season down here.
Right.
Wow.
But I have,
so that's reduced your watering tasks, but, of course, makes...
Yes. But we have dozens of kinds of citrus, all kinds of tropical fruits we've never even heard of before. Things, even though I'm from New York, as well as you, things that Balducci's never carried.
Really?
Or Dean DeLuca. Yes.
Give me an example of that.
Mame apple, which is not an apple. It is in the family Gutiferi, which is in which the major, the best known fruit is the mangosteen. You find them in Chinatown.
Yes.
During certain times of the year.
Yes.
But the mame apple looks like a small leather bowling ball.
What does it taste like?
It has one big seed, and when it's ripe, it's melon orange, and it's, if I said the word mealy, that sounds unappetizing, but it's really sweet and delicious, but not juicy. So it makes great cheesecakes and great milkshakes and great custards and great ice creams, but it's not usually just eaten with a spoon the way you would a melon, you know.
Right, right, like a honeydew or,
yeah, precisely. It's just not juicy like that. It's dry.
Right. Oh,
so you have citrus. You have, didn't you also make a sort of a desert kind of dry garden there as well?
Well, yes, there's a big garden, all with cactus and succulents, some of which are edible, some of which are native to Puerto Rico and endangered. And I collected cuttings when I was director of horticulture for the St. George Village Botanical Garden on St. Croix, brought them over and propagated them here. So it's sort of like a mini botanical garden of cactus and succulents.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what else do you grow? I'm sure you have every herb. And
well, no, don't forget. Basil, yes, of course I have. Mm-hmm. Rosemary, yes. I grow my own bay.
Yes.
But things like, you know, if too much rain, the rosemary drowns.
Yes.
Right.
I can grow mint, you know, over and over again, but it dries up or it's too wet and it drowns.
Right.
So the things you guys are used to up there can be impossible for me to cultivate down here.
Right.
And in fact, you know, I don't object to buying cut herbs in our markets, propagate them, root them, and set them out in the garden. But remember, the Puerto Rican diet is different from the North American diet, and things like sage and basil and thyme are considered medicinal herbs and not culinary herbs.
Ah.
So you never even find the plants.
Oh,
that's really interesting. I remember when we were talking, you said sometimes you have to go to go grocery shopping for certain things. You actually have to go back to St. Croix. Isn't that right?
Well, yes, I know that's a funny story. A lot of people here go to the main island. Isla Grande is what Puerto Rico is called. We're Isla Nena, the little island. They're Isla Grande, the big island.
Mm-hmm.
And, they, you know, it's a big island. They've got Costco and all of these giant food clubs. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Oh,
yeah, the big box stores.
But, you
they've
know,
arrived.
But you know, but I don't go there. You have to fly, then you have to rent a car. And if I'm doing all of that, I go back to St. Croix and stay with my friends. And bring, you know, 50 pounds, 70 pounds of groceries back.
Yeah.
White chocolate chips, packaged herbs, all kinds of things I cannot get.
For us, it's like going to Jersey to do that.
Yes, to IKEA, you know, for food.
Or the supermarket.
Well, I would go shopping in St. Croix if I had to.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a huge Muslim population. There's a huge East Indian population.
In St. Croix.
Yeah, so I get all kinds of really wonderful Middle Eastern and Indian herbs and spices to use.
Great.
Which I could not get on Isla Grande.
Uh-huh. So tell us about the Calamandan orange.
As something to grow indoors.
Well, we grow it here. It's a common plant that you see in the city. At least I remember Mrs. Yeah. Wu sold them in Lower Manhattan. Yes.
Right.
Mrs. Wu.
They're always like brought out now, you know, like in January, February, March.
Mm-hmm. To give people a sense of spring.
Yeah.
In the New York market. Right, they're classic indoor bonsai subjects. It is a true citrus, small evergreen leaves, really classic fragrant white flowers, and marble-sized orange fruit.
But it's bitter, right? It's not really a eating fruit.
No, it is. It is very bitter and very acid.
Uh-huh.
And just to sit down and have one, really, they're not very edible. One thing you can do, of course, is make an orangeade. And with, you know, water and a sweetener or sugar, it's quite drinkable.
Mm-hmm.
But what I always recommend people doing and what I do here, because I get bushels to dispense or to deal with, I make marmalade.
Yeah.
And with sugar and boiled down, it's a terrific marmalade.
I remember fabulous dinners in your Soho loft with just the best food and the most unusual ingredients. And that was really, really, really special if you got invited over to Scott and Bill's apartment Aww. For dinner.
Yeah, and I still make, you taught me how to make ginger brandy.
The brandy, yeah. It warms
oh,
up.
That's right.
That warms us
that's
up.
Right.
After
puts hair on
bulbs, yeah, it puts hair on us.
Especially now. Yes, I do that still and still teach that.
So tell us a bit about the kefir lime. That's a really interesting citrus as well.
I grow that as well. It's East Indian. It is a great citrus fruit for indoor gardeners because you use the leaf as the aromatic flavoring.
Mm-hmm.
If you went to specialty markets in New York, you could buy them dried in cellophane packages.
Mm-hmm.
It's citrus hystrix. That's H-Y-S-T-R-I-X. And hystrix in botanical Latin means very spiny. And it is indeed very spiny. But it's a classic ingredient in Indonesian and Thai foods.
Uh-huh.
You can add the leaf like a bay leaf and then pull it out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what I do is I usually pulverize it in a spice grinder, and so it's mixed into the food.
Uh-huh.
How easy is it to grow?
Well, like all citrus indoors, it wants full sun. You want a south or southwest window.
Mm-hmm.
You want fresh air in winter. They hate the radiator.
Mm-hmm.
So when Bill and I moved into our former loft, we took all the radiators out.
Right.
So the loft was cooler. It's the radiated heat that's the downfall.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a cold sunroom, that would be perfect for it. Even though it's tropical, the colder the air, the more humid the atmosphere. Of course, like all citrus, you know, you can get mealybugs indoors and aphids
scale.
Indoors.
Scale, yeah.
And scale and spider mites.
Uh-huh.
You know, you just, you know, use your favorite organic insecticide.
Right.
You know, the safer products, etc., or whatever. Or shower them under the tap. But really, they are easy to grow. And the kefir lime is great because, as I said, all you need is the leaf. Who cares if it ever flowers? Here, of course, they flower and bear fruit, and it's a citrus that looks like it's 100 years old. It's all warted and wrinkly, and when you cut it open, there's like hardly any juice in there. But I pop it in the food processor with coarse sea salt,
okay,
and package it up into glass jars, and just keep it on the shelf, and the salt picks up the flavor, and I use it as Thai salt.
Thai salt. Oh, wow.
And that keeps indefinitely because salt is the preservative.
Right, right. That's so smart. Well, unfortunately, Scott, we have to have a break for a second.
Sure.
Just hang on to the line. You're listening to We Dig Plants on Heritage Radio Network. We'll hear more from Scott Appel, our special guest, in just a few moments.
Darkness has covered my light and has changed.
welcome back to We Dig Plants on the Heritage Radio Network. That was Concrete Jungle by Brazilian singer Seu. I thought it was an appropriate transition as we talk with Scott Appel, our friend from Vieques, about growing tropical fruits and spices indoors.
Who left New York for the beautiful, beautiful wilds of the Vieques. Islands.
So let's get a little spicy now, Scott. Let's get into growing some unusual spices indoors. What about cardamom?
Well, cardamom, as you know, is considered a warming spice, like allspice and cloves and cinnamon. It sort of warms the cockles of your heart when you eat it. Mm-hmm. It actually, once again, is East Indian and Indonesian, but the Dutch East India took it around the old world.
Right.
And it was absorbed and embraced by the Nordic countries, you know, Denmark, Sweden, Finland. And when you have a good cheese Danish back in New York, that subtle flavor is cardamom seed in the dough itself.
I bet people don't even realize that.
Well, it's a very specific flavor, and without it, it's not authentic dough. And the Nords have used it in their sausage making and their meat cooking as well, which most folks don't know.
I love putting it in meat. I actually do that a lot.
Uh-huh. It's a great flavor. It's one of my favorites.
It's very subtle.
It's Eleuteria cardamomum. It's in the Gingerbaceae, which means or tells us it's a ginger cousin. And it is the seed that's used. And you go to the store, and I always buy my seeds whole, and I grind them myself. So I get the whole cardamom. Of course, I have to get it mail order here. But I grind it as I need it. I have a spice grinder. Everybody who wants to cook really well ought to get one. The plants are huge. They easily grow 6 to 8 feet tall.
Okay.
The flowers are beautiful. They have little pods, and that's where the seeds are located. But grown as a house plant, it will really rarely, if ever, flower. If you had a greenhouse, maybe. On a windowsill, not ever, although it makes a beautiful house plant.
Oh, that's so interesting. Are the leaves fragrant as well if you don't get the flower and pods to grow on it?
Absolutely. Number one, you will never get the flowers and pods in an apartment window. But the leaves are incredibly aromatic and have that same flavor. So what I recommend people doing, and what I do it here, I use cardamom leaves. Whenever I steam rice, I line the steamer with the foliage, steam my rice, which imparts that flavor, then remove the foliage and serve up my rice. A little fancier thing to do, and these are really fancy tidbits, is use the leaves as sort of flavor-enhancing wrappers. And you could macerate or marinate deveined shelled shrimp, for example, in ginger and soy sauce, maybe a little nuoc nam, you know, fish sauce.
Right.
You know, you want your food cut up into maybe 1-inch cubes. The leaves are not wide, so everything's got to be rather small. But you could wrap the shrimp in bacon, then wrap the whole thing up in a leaf. Use a wooden skewer or a toothpick. Remember to soak your toothpicks in water so they absorb water so they don't burn up and burst into flame when you cook them.
Well, that explains a few of my kitchen disasters.
You know, but as a vegetarian, you know, tofu cubes and seitan and tempeh.
Right.
Or cubed pre-cooked eggplant, macerated and then, you know, and jazzed up. And then you put them on the grill, you put them under the broiler. Of course, the leaves blacken, and so, but everybody gets a skewer and they unpeel it. You don't eat the leaf, it's garbage.
Right.
Or you put it on the compost pile.
Right.
But you get that flavor in your little parcel of food.
Yeah.
Now, these are tidbits, so you might need to make six for every person. So it's a nice, fun, you know, grilling idea, or have your friends sort of assembly line help make them.
Right. Tell us a little bit about turmeric.
Oh, that's an interesting spice.
Well, turmeric, of course, classic in Indian cooking. It's what the Buddhist priests dyed their robes with, you know, that fabulous orange-yellow color.
Yeah.
It's curcuma longa. It's another ginger cousin. and we use the roots just like ginger. I grow it here outdoors.
Okay.
If you live in Florida or somewhere forest free, you could grow it outdoors as well. You dig up the root. It looks like ginger, very aromatic, and carrot orange. It's a fabulous color. Of course, it stains your fingers and all the utensils, so you have to really scrub up.
Right.
But if you have a large enough pot and a greenhouse or a bay window, you could just dig up your rooted plants, cut off some roots and put them back in. For a small apartment house windowsill, cut off the leaf and use them once again, just like the cardamom, as flavor-enhancing wrappers.
Okay.
For different tidbits of food.
Okay.
In fact, may I mention a place that people might call?
Oh, please.
Yes.
One of my favorite places is called Well Sweep. That's actually hyphenated, Well Sweep.
Oh, I know that. Yes.
Well Sweep Herb Farm in Port Murray, New Jersey.
Okay.
And they sell plants. And so you can get everything we're talking about mail order from them.
Great.
Now,
we'll put that on our Facebook fan page.
We'll put a link to them.
Yeah, terrific.
Sure. No, it's a great place.
Okay. And another one that you have experience with is the prickly pear cactus pad.
Well, I love them, and I grow them here.
So how do you cook with them?
Well, this is a Puncha coccinellifera. The prickly pear that makes the fruit that you see in fancy schmancy gourmet markets is a Puncha ficus indica. That means Indian fig in Latin. This is not the one we're actually talking about. This is the one that's called nopal or nopalito in Mexico or Guatemala, and it's used to make a salad. You cut off the young pads. You need a pair of tongs or a pair of gloves because, of course, they look spineless, but they have, teensy-weensy, really pernicious spines.
Right.
Take a scraper, a peeler, vegetable peeler, peel off the spines, go take a knife, go around the edges and cut that off. I would dip the whole pad in a little bit of olive oil, maybe some coarse salt, freshly cracked pepper, and you grill either in a grill pan to get those nice grill lines, or on your outdoor grill or hibachi or even under the broiler.
Uh-huh.
The pads turn color from bright green to sort of green, like cooked green bean color, like olive green.
Yes.
And you just slice them up, mix them a little olive oil. It's sour.
Okay.
It's naturally sour, so you don't need more lemon juice, but you might taste them and see. And it's a classic, Central American cold salad.
Yes, I see them for sale in my neighborhood in Gravesend. There's quite a large Mexican community now, and they have these ingredients that I'd never seen before. I've seen also jarred, I guess, pickled nopalitos, the salad kind of already made.
Yeah, right. The jarred ones are not as good.
No.
They're always better fresh. I've used the jarred ones, and they're great in actually Mexican frittatas because the eggs and herbs help hide the flavor.
Yeah.
But when you buy the fresh ones, they're always better. In fact, to grow your own, just buy some fresh ones and propagate them from cuttings.
And they root really well. I mean, easily.
They root really easily, but once again, of course, this is a cactus. So
yes.
Now we change our potting medium. You want something very sandy, very fertile, and very well drained. Clay pot would be beneficial.
Mm-hmm.
Southern window or southwest window, they want to fry in the hot sun.
Mm-hmm.
Putting them in a northern window.
Right, you're just going to lose
work.
Them. Right.
No, they're not getting any direct light at all.
Right.
So, Scott, what's your favorite thing to grow? Do you have a favorite thing that you could not grow here in New York?
Something I could not grow in New York. Everything I've talked about, I could not grow in New York.
Right.
I had a pot of cardamom, and I did what I explained to you.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't flower and...
Oh, no, it was a great house plant, really.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of water, really big drinkers. But my favorite thing to grow, that I cannot, that I would love to, is ficus, the edible figs
that
the Italians grow.
You can't grow them there?
Well, they do grow. They just produce really badly because we don't have that ichneumon wasp, which is the pollinator.
Ah,
right.
So they have the fruit, but the fruit is on the dry side, whereas, of course, in Italy and the States, that wasp lives there, and so the natural pollinator is present.
Mm-hmm.
So but to grow my own fresh figs, that would be really, like, top-notch.
Yeah. Interesting.
You know, but when I put out homemade marmalade and my homegrown bread and, you know, my homegrown herbs.
That's,
you know,
what I remember. Those are the dinners that I remember.
Right. You know, everything comes from the heart. And, you know, I'm no one special. I just try to.
You are. I disagree.
Yeah.
Well, Alice and I were talking about that on a previous show about how people have gotten so far away from where their food comes from, Scott, and you and I have talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
What the skills that you have and the knowledge that you have needs to be passed on and shared, because people have forgotten what their grandmothers knew and even what their mothers knew.
Right.
Sure.
Know? Right.
Sure. No, my mom was a bird's eye girl. She was that generation where everything was out of a can or out of the freezer.
Right. So it was really just your own interest and cultivation that got you to Vieques.
Ultimately.
Yes, exactly.
But you started very young at the Botanical Garden, didn't you, Scott?
I'm sorry to interrupt or just step on your lines. My folks were smart enough to enroll me in the Brooklyn Botanical Gardens Children's Garden Program.
Right.
And I was 9. And, of course, part of the program was inner-city kids would get a plot of land, grow vegetables, and take them home.
Right.
Well, I would bring, you know, fresh zucchini and fresh corn and fresh eggplant and fresh green beans and say, here, Mom.
Yeah.
And Julia, and I would say, Julia, child just says, all you have to do is boil salted water and put them in.
Uh-huh.
Well, my mom, of course, was really angry and didn't like my precocious tutorial ship. Told me basically what I could do with the vegetables, and that was to cook them myself.
That's great. So tell us what's it like for you daily? Tell us what a typical day growing all your own food and being immersed in these plants. What's it like for you?
It's constant.
Uh-huh.
It's constant because there's no winter. We don't have cold where you can take a break and read a book.
Right.
So, you know, I'm up at 5:30.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, feed the dogs, feed the cats, feed the chickens, start checking for water.
Uh-huh.
Make bread sponge to put up bread because, you know, I bake all my own bread.
Uh-huh.
Look at my special orders. Run around with a hose or run around with a watering can and water what I can. I'm on my feet all day long, really running.
Uh-huh.
People think, you know, we sort of lounge around by
right.
You know, the pool with cocktails all day.
Like you're the gentleman farmer, right.
But, you know, it's like, hurry, you know. and of course, then there's the laundry and, you know, there's no dryer. It uses too much electricity.
Right.
So, oh my gosh, it's going to rain. Quick, get the towel.
Right.
Yes.
So it's very different.
Yeah.
And it's very dusty with the Montserrat dust and the Sahara dust. Visiting Vieques is a wonderful experience, but it's not, living here is not for everybody.
Right. Right.
Well, your house is a very open house, isn't it, Scott? It's very open to the elements.
It's completely open. We had only the bedroom has screens, so you find lizard eggs in the teacups, and during the new moon, during storms, the termites and the ants swarm, and they're attracted to the light. So all of a sudden, you'll see 1, 2, 3 termites, and all of a sudden, there'll be hundreds of thousands going towards the light, and you have to say to everybody, quick run,
and
turn up all the lights.
And you thought the tourists in Soho on Saturday were bad.
It's so you learn how to act fast. And when my sister from Brooklyn came to visit, she was absolutely appalled.
Yeah.
And will never visit again.
Oh.
You know, things walk through the house and lay eggs, or they walk through the house. Things come in and eat other things.
Right.
Your favorite plants die because they're just not happy, and
yeah.
It's It's very organic.
Right.
It sounds it.
I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Oh, Scott, it's so good to talk to you.
It's so good to talk to you again. We're so happy to have had you on our show. Unfortunately, you're welcome. We want you to come back again.
Good.
Yeah. We unfortunately have to end, and we'd like to thank you so much for sharing your knowledge once again with us. I always come away having learned something whenever we spend time together. Would you like us to post some links for our listeners? Would you like to give a website or a contact for yourself?
To be perfectly frank, I don't have a website. Okay. Part of me is very old-fashioned, so I do not have a website.
But I can list some of your books that they can currently purchase.
Well, you may. I mean, okay. If you care to, of course.
Sure.
I do a lot of culinary horticultural writing for the Brooklyn Botanic Gardens. There's lots of things there.
Good. Well, we'll definitely put a link to that. Thank you so much. We'd also like to thank Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. Come and get yourself a pie. This show is produced by Jack Inslee and engineered by Nat Wiener. And, of course, an archive of the show is available at heritageradionetwork.com. We Dig Plants. Please join our Facebook fan page, Groundworks, Inc. We Dig Plants.
Happy gardening.
Happy gardening.
Happy gardening.